Hi, this is Bob Enyart with Real Science Friday. You can get great science materials from us, DVDs, debates, books, all from our website, kgov.com, or by calling us 1-800-8-ENYART. So here's a list of what you can get. DVDs from Illustra Media that we carry, The Privileged Planet, Unlocking the Mystery of Life, and Darwin's Dilemma. And then there are the two fabulous DVDs from Dr. Carl Werner on Evolution, the Grand Experiment, Living Fossils. You'll want to see those. And then Spike Passaris, formerly with the U.S. Military Space Program, What You Aren't Being Told About Astronomy. And then there's the BEL debates, Bob Debates an Evolutionist, Dr. Eugenie Scott on DVD, and a book, Does God Exist?, Bob Enyart debates atheist Zakith, a psychologist. We also have two DVDs on our seminar, Does God Exist?, and then Mount St. Helens, the explosive evidence for catastrophe. We also have our debate on the age of the earth, where I got to debate a mathematician from CU up in Boulder and a geophysicist on this MP3 CD. And finally, my favorite science book, In the Beginning, by Dr. Walt Brown. Just call us at 800-8-ENYART, 800-836-9278, or check out our online store in the science department, either at kgov.com or realsciencefriday.com. Greetings to the brightest audience in the country. Welcome to another episode of Real Science Friday. I'm Bob Enyart. Fred Williams is on assignment. One of the greatest science DVDs ever produced, presenting the evidence against naturalistic evolution and therefore for intelligent design for our creator, is called Programming of Life. It's also one of the newest of the great DVDs available to the creation community, and it could also be shown in public schools. The man behind the project, Dr. Don Johnson, is especially qualified to research the genetic programming of life, the functioning of proteins in living cells, and so on, because he earned a PhD in chemistry from Michigan State University and a PhD, and I think this is even more relevant, a PhD in computer and information sciences from the University of Minnesota. Research scientist Dr. Don Johnson, welcome to Real Science Friday.
Well, thank you very much. Well, pleasure to be here.
It's great to talk to you. Don, could I first ask you about the quality of the DVD itself? I know you're a scientist. You're probably not a video producer, but this is one of the most wonderful presentations of the argument that I've ever seen, the quality of production. How did you pull that off?
Well, this started actually several years ago, and I've been involved with the video production, LaBarge Media, who actually arranged for all the animations and everything else, and I explained what I wanted to be done, and they basically ran it from there, and then when they would do something, they would run it by me to make sure it was accurate and all kinds of things like that. But basically, I think they did a terrific job.
Well, you had professional editors, the narrator, host, Chris Hurt, the creative director you just mentioned, David LaBarge. These guys have state-of-the-art talent. The animation is beautiful. For example, there's one scene, and I love it, when your host, Chris Hurt, you're looking at New York City, and then all of a sudden he's holding the city in his arms, and then we see a comparison of a single living cell to a miniature city. And there's a professor, Len Ortenzi, if I'm saying his name right, and he's comparing then a cell to a city. This complexity is something far beyond what, for example, Charles Darwin could ever have imagined. And now evolutionists somehow have to try to account for all this sophistication in every living cell in the world.
Yes, I think the simplification, people have for many years said the digital code in cells is very computer-like. Well, that's an understatement because it's not just computer-like, those are real computers. Mm. And the code is real computer programs.
Real computers, you guys quote my old boss. I used to work for Bill Gates up in Redmond, Washington.
Okay.
Had dinner in his home. And you guys have a quote from him that's undeniable. He said, and you present this, that human DNA is like a computer program, but far, far more advanced than any software we've ever created. And now Steve Jobs over at Apple, he's preceded us and Bill Gates in going to meet our maker, but I don't think he'd disagree with Bill Gates that the programming in each living cell is vastly more sophisticated than anything that our most brilliant engineers have ever created.
That is absolutely true. And to believe that that kind of computer programming could just arise by undirected natural processes is sheer lunacy.
It seems to be that, Dr. Johnson. Of course, natural selection, we are told that mutations and other mechanisms, along with the survival of the fittest, natural selection, will gradually hone and fine-tune all kinds of mechanisms. But to get life to begin with, to get the first reproducing organism, natural selection can't work until you have in place a reproducing organism.
That is true. And I point out, for example, in my book especially, that the video is based on the Programming of Life book.
And I have the book here. I just received this today in the mail, and so I'm eager to read this also. Thank you for sending this.
But that points out that the things that really require some scientific answers, which there are none at this point, is how did undirected, inanimate, non-living material develop these sophisticated computer systems and the programs that are required by all life?
Yeah.
And that was the origin of life that you were talking about. Mm-hmm. And as I point out in my book in more detail, is that the idea that natural selection works on random mutations, that's like saying we have this operational computer because every single protein that's generated by the cell is an actual output of a computer program.
Right.
Every single one of them, there's more than 100,000 different proteins that are generated by real computer programs.
So each protein, each different kind of protein, a protein is like a tiny bio machine. It's a tiny little machine that performs one or more functions. So you're saying that each protein that's produced, and some cells have millions of proteins in them. Maybe they have 800 different kinds of proteins or 1,300 different kinds of proteins, different kinds of little machines. But one of those proteins, you might have 400,000 copies of it. You might have another, you might have a million copies of a particular protein. Some you might only have maybe hundreds or thousands. But each one is the output of a computer-controlled machine, or really a set of machines.
Biological computers are made up of multiple components, just like real electronic computers are made up of multiple components.
Mm-hmm.
But they act together to form a computer. And in the cells, there are literally hundreds of thousands or even millions of real computers in a cell. And they're interacting with one another and communicating. And it's digital information that's being transferred. The translation of digital codes from one operating system into another one that's completely arbitrary. And it's just completely ridiculous to think that that could just pop into existence.
Yeah, a scientist, we reported on this with the particulars just a few months ago on Real Science Friday, but a scientist, it might have been at Cornell or UCLA, did an evaluation of the number of synapses in a single human brain compared to all the switches and computers and processors in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And he said one brain has far more synapses than all the processors and switches and hubs that exist in the entire internet and on all the computers we've made in the entire world. One human brain.
Yes, I believe that the number is somewhere around 10 to the 16th different interconnecting synapses, which is a 1 followed by 16 zeros, which is definitely more than all the computers in the world. And your brain functions, the number of operations per second is also greater than all the operations per second that are possible using all the electronic computers in the world.
Oh, my. Now, we talk about, say, megaflops or gigaflops or petaflops. Those are how many floating point operations per second a computer could do. So you got thousands, millions, billions, trillions. And typically, they reach those greater speeds by having massively parallel computers with literally tens of thousands of processors all connected together. The U.S. has many of the world's greatest supercomputers. China and Japan are always competing with us. But a single human brain could outperform all these computers. Dr. Johnson, we recently did a show on your typical honeybee. As it goes from flower to flower gathering nectar, it turns out that researchers over in England determined that a honeybee, solves the least distance problem between hundreds of flowers far more rapidly than our best supercomputers can do, and that's a tiny little insect solving an extremely difficult mathematical problem.
Yes. That's true, that animals and brains of animals and humans even can solve things a whole lot faster. For example, if you look at a crowd of people and you have a loved one in that crowd, you can pick out that person. Now think of what it would take to write a computer program to do that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just phenomenal.
Right, and to do it within a split second.
Right.
In your video, you bring us into the inner workings of the cell. There have been other videos by atheists and creationists who've done this, but I'd like to tell you what my producer, Russ Holmes, said about your video, Programming of Life. He said, I've been waiting 20 years to see this video, because what you do, of course you know, Dr. Johnson, but for the sake of the audience, I've now watched this DVD twice. You bring us into the cell, and you not only show us with tremendous animation what's happening, but you explain it. And you explain it in a way that the layperson could follow, and of course that the expert and the scientist can just glory in how awesome this intelligence is that assembled the inner workings of every living organism.
Yes, and the interesting part of that whole thing is that, you know, the video, as you're well aware, is completely secular. It could be used in a public school system.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't identify who I believe the programmer is or the one who designed the computers. All it does is present the scientific facts and say, how did this arise? How did this come into being? Mm-hmm. And it opens up the inquiry as to, well, let's investigate, because none of the scenarios that have been proposed so far as being scientific have anything at all to say about programming and how programs can arise by these undirected processes. Mm-hmm. And the other interesting thing about Darwinism, for example, the natural selection that you had mentioned previously, natural selection works on already completed organisms, which already have functional proteins in them.
Right.
And what random mutation supposedly does is random mutations randomly modify existing computer programs to sometimes produce better computer programs, a concept that's totally foreign to information science.
Oh, yeah.
That it has never been done.
Yeah, at Apple Computer, they don't use computers to randomly mutate their code to try to make a better version of their operating system, Leopard or whatever. Adobe doesn't randomly modify the source code for Photoshop to try to get a better version. That would be absurd. It would break. And yet that's what we're told is the mechanism, along with natural selection, that produced all this brilliance. Could we talk a little bit about what's going on in the cell? As you show in your DVD, You start with the building blocks of proteins, which are acids. They're amino acids. And, you know, I find it so funny, Dr. Johnson, that atheists will say that years ago, the Miller-Urey experiments, that they may have created life in the lab. And the same atheist will look at a little boy or a little girl in the womb, say a four-month-old baby, and say, that's not life, but the acid in the test tube was life. That is such a contradiction, but it's typical of the kinds of contradictions we observe by those who are denying the existence of a creator.
Well, there's all kinds of problems with the Miller-Urey experiment. For one thing, they had to remove the amino acids that were formed immediately from the medium that it formed in, because otherwise it would have been instantly decomposed.
Destroyed, because they were producing a poison, a tar.
Well, basically it ended up with a lot of tar, but the sparks and things that generate supposedly were like the earlier, it would have destroyed the amino acids that were formed. So they had to quickly trap them out in order to isolate them.
Yeah, and even if by some wild chance you got hundreds of amino acids, they have to be lined up in such an order, a particular order, to produce a functional protein. Then, of course, they'd have to be folded in the right way to make the right machine. Even if all that happened, which when you run the numbers, you'd need trillions upon trillions of universes, with each one with an electron being a laboratory running the experiment 1,000 times a second to get one protein. And even if you did that, all you'd have is one dead protein. Big deal.
Well, yeah, proteins are not life. And that's the other aspect of this. And the other interesting thing that I point out more in my book is that it is impossible mathematically, from information theory, to transfer information from protein into the DNA and RNA. Can't be done. And that's covered more thoroughly in the book. So the idea that basically information theory rules out totally the protein's first scenarios for the origin of life. It cannot happen.
And it can't happen for so many reasons. I love the fact that you guys start by talking about information, because one of the things we've been saying on Real Science Friday for years now is that when we talk about life being carbon-based, okay, we can make that argument, carbon molecules in amino acids and sugars and so on. But more fundamentally, life is information-based. The particular acids that are used are convenient. It is instruction. It's intention. It's this information that is embodied in living organisms that's ultimately the most fundamental aspect of biological life. It's information-based. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. In fact, I just had a peer-reviewed paper that made that very point, that basically made the point that biology is not a physical science like chemistry and physics. Biology is an information science, because every single biological process is controlled by information and its processing. It is not simply physically determinable. It is determined by information, and it's totally different conceptually than the physical sciences, which is determined by the interaction of physical laws and properties and things like that.
Dr. Johnson, I recently interviewed a very popular atheist, Aaron Ra. His YouTube videos have millions of views. And now we're in a written debate on a website over in England called League of Reason. He says that biology, evolutionary biology, is all about the different frequencies of alleles in DNA. To me, that is so superficial. It's like saying we're studying great works of literature and we're focusing on the spelling and the syntax. It seems that it is that superficial and that immature what they think. They really think that by looking at the chemistry of the acids and counting how many times a specific version of a gene appears, that they're figuring it out. That is the most superficial level of biological life.
I would agree.
Can I ask you then about, in your DVD, you guys talk about how proteins are made, you go through the process of how they're made, and it's just so exciting to see. But it turns out that the whole sophisticated process takes about 150 proteins in order to make a single protein.
That's true. Yeah. And those have to be pre-existing and fully functional. Otherwise, you cannot make a protein. And proteins are used to make everything else, including the DNA. They are used for the manufacturing and replication of the DNA molecule. So it's really hard to say what came first, you know, the chicken or the egg.
Right.
And even some of the scenarios now that RNA first, for example, where you have RNA supposedly could theoretically produce itself without the use of an additional protein. But then you still have the problem of all of the functionality that's in that kind of RNA to do that. Where did that come from? Because that fully functional RNA to do that would have to have basically the enzymatic activity protein that's done by proteins now. That would have had to have been there somehow in order for it to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just pushes back the problem.
It seems like we spend billions of dollars educating young people in our public schools about science, allegedly. And it seems like so many of those kids hardly have an idea about the wonder and awe and sophistication in things in our solar system, astronomy, and in biology. Discoveries, for example, over the last decade, dozens of refereed scientific journals saying, look, we're discovering soft tissue from dinosaurs and mosasaurs, and we believe this is original biological material. All these kinds of discoveries that millions of young people are not being shown. I think if your DVD was shown in a biology class in a high school, the awe and wonder and amazement of it all would be new to most of the students. They're not really aware. And I think it works against the evolutionary worldview to have students see the sophistication of life.
Well, most biologists don't like to think about information because they have a real hard time trying to explain it from an evolutionary perspective. One of the most interesting things that I have on my website is a USSCI.info has the content of a flyer that about a year ago, the journal Science was lamenting the fact that only 28% of biology teachers in high school teach evolution like they should.
Right.
Their solution to the problem I thought was extremely interesting because their solution, their recommendation is, and I will quote here, those who cannot accept evolution as a matter of faith to pursue other careers.
Wow.
In other words, the journal Science says if you can't accept evolution as a matter of faith, you don't belong teaching science.
Mm.
And my question is, why should science be something that you have to accept on faith opposed to something that's evidence-based?
Right, and we reported on that here, that there is a significant percentage of high school biology teachers who will not affirm Darwinism in their classes. There is a significant percentage of U.S. medical doctors who are saying that Darwinism cannot explain biological life. We mentioned one of the most popular Denver veterinarians on a show, Dr. Ed Umlauf, who says there is no way that a naturalistic explanation can account for the sophistication in a dog. It can't happen. Dr. John Sanford, who's one of the world's leading geneticists, he wrote Genetic Entropy, he and others are talking about their own fields, and they're saying things like, for example, most geneticists do not talk about evolution. When they get together at their conferences, they don't talk about evolution. They talk about the sophistication of genetics. And it's only when they publish that the publishers virtually require them to put the obligatory nod to Darwin and say somewhere in this all evolved. But in reality, that has nothing to do with the actual state of the art and the day-to-day work and accomplishments of genetic science.
You know, I point this out on my website, for example, that this is actually hurting our nation. President Obama, for example, lamented the fact that our nation is falling behind in math and science. And I have the answer to that on my website. It says, why is that? Hmm. Well, our nation was established on Judeo-Christian principles. And people don't like to hear that evolution and undirected natural processes is the source of everything we see.
Right.
And they're not willing to accept that. And since that is taught as the basis of science...
You're forcing many of the brilliant minds out of science
right.
and higher education
right.
because they're persecuted.
And they don't want to pursue a field of study which attacks their core beliefs.
Right. And not only that, it is now admitted by most, even secular historians of science, that it was Christianized Europe that was the birthplace of modern science, because the belief that the creator was rational and that therefore his creation would be rational and could be studied.
Yes, I totally agree. In fact, the greatest scientist who ever lived, as acknowledged by scientists,
is Isaac Newton,
who spent more time studying the Bible than he did on his scientific endeavors.
Yeah, and that atheist, Aaron Robb, when we were debating on the radio, he denied that Isaac Newton could be considered a creationist. Dr. Johnson, this is what we put up with. In the written debate, he should have then humbled himself and said, you know, because we brought that up, and he said, okay, I was wrong. And he tried to invent a definition of a creationist that would mean that Isaac Newton was not a creationist. And I said, well, he believed the earth was created 6,000 years earlier by God, and that no natural explanation could explain the orbit of the planets, that his system of gravity would not allow the planets to exist except by the hand of God. That's what Isaac Newton wrote, and he refused to admit that Isaac Newton could rightly be described as a creationist.
I guess you could define things the way you want. But
yeah. And that's what we do put up with on a regular basis. Dr. Johnson, this Programming of Life DVD, I'm so excited to get the book now. What are you working on currently?
Well, I have peer-reviewed papers that have just recently been published. Another one is in the works, and I'm working on a third one also, and I do a lot of talks around the nation and actually around the world. The easiest way to get to my Christian website, which has links to Christian videos and things that I've done, presentations.
And I have that right here. It's djgo.info. Is that right? Right?
Djgo. Yep, that's it.
That's pretty good to have a four-letter domain name. That's great.
Well,
so we
that
will
actually links to a longer one, but that's all right.
Yeah, sure. So we will link to your website and to the DVD. We're going to provide it here at Real Science Friday. Thank you so much, Dr. Don Johnson, for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
All right. It's an honor. Fred Williams and I will be talking about this DVD on future shows. Check out our store at realsciencefriday.com. You can get it from us. And this guy, he's a superhero, Dr. Don Johnson. And God bless you guys.
Marriage is the very foundation of human society, but it was God's idea to begin with. What is God's plan for your marriage? How can you know? What can you do to learn and grow with your spouse to honor God in your marriage? Pastor Bob Enyart covers this deeply personal and critically important topic in his teaching series, God's Plan for Marriage. Order by calling 800-8-ENYART or online at kgovstore.com.